I remember as a child the fable of asking the caterpillar which leg he puts first when he walks. And the more he thought about it, the less he was able to walk at all. Because a lot of what we are and what we do is so unreflective. And we just are. And it isn't until somebody pulls us up with a question about how we do what we do or who we are that we realize that we operate so unthinkingly in this world. And direct questions have a tendency to freeze us. It's why, you know, in college applications, they always ask such strange questions. Instead of just saying, "Who are you?" which would be a very difficult question to answer, they ask all sorts of indirect questions. Like the question Barbara Walters famously asks her guests, "If you were a tree, what sort of tree would you be?" which I guess is easier to answer than "Who are you?" And yet the question about who you are is a question that everyone periodically ought to ask him or herself, both as an exercise and also to sharpen our own self-definition. Because we do want to have a sense of who we are, not only to present it to the world, but to understand it for ourselves. And recently, and in a way that you will see in a moment also ties into the Haftarah, several people have asked me, "So what is this conservative Judaism thing anyway?" And there are many, many ways to answer that, but I thought since I have taken a few stabs at it in the past, I'd take a slightly different tack and talk about a couple of things that are real to conservative Jews and that we believe, which is not a definition about who we aren't. Because very often people tend to define themselves in negatives. That's our first self-definition. When we're children, we start to realize, "Oh, I'm not this person, I'm not that person." When we go to elementary and middle and high school, we say, "I want to be like this kid, but I don't want to be like that kid." But when you reach a certain level of maturity, you shouldn't say anymore, "What I am is not Orthodox or not Reform." That's an immature self-definition. A mature self-definition is, "This is what I believe." So let me, without in any way being comprehensive, tell you a couple things that conservative Judaism stands and has always stood for that is important and defining, and certainly I hope finds expression through our synagogue and our community. Among the rainbow of beliefs and traditions that conservative Judaism was founded on, perhaps none is more important than that we believe in history. Now that sounds like a strange thing. Everybody believes in history, right? We all believe things happened. But conservative Judaism looked at Judaism of the past and said, "You know, the tradition that Moses practiced was not the same as the tradition of Rabbi Akiva in the time of the Talmud. And Rabbi Akiva's tradition was not the same as Maimonides in the Middle Ages, and Maimonides' tradition was not the same as ours, and that's a good thing. It's an inevitable thing, because as the world changes, unless you are frozen in time, you change with it. Because there are things we know, truths of all kind, including, by the way, spiritual truths that some of our ancestors didn't. In the time of the Bible, slavery was accepted. In the time of the rabbi, slavery was accepted. In the time of the Civil War, among many learned Jews, slavery was accepted. I think you wouldn't find anyone today in the Jewish world that would defend slavery. That's a gradual dawning spiritual truth that fits very well with the ideology of conservative Judaism. Because we think that we learn more as the world grows and changes. Just in the way that we speak the language of the land in which we grow, we also absorb its ideas, and some of them are in accord with our tradition and some are not. And that's why, if you look, for example, at the greatest Jewish philosopher, Maimonides, who does he quote over and over again in the Guide to the Perplexed? The man he calls the philosopher, Aristotle. Now, Aristotle wasn't a Jew. Why is Maimonides quoting him? Because he knew that Aristotle had important things to say. It's sad to me that if you look in the books of many very traditional rabbis today, or you listen to their teachings, they'll never quote a non-Jewish philosopher or thinker. But you realize that's a loss, not a gain. Because although this may be surprising to you, given that Jews comprise about 0.005% of the world's population, the other 99 point whatever percentage also have interesting things to say about the world. And if you close your ears, it doesn't actually increase your piety, it just decreases your knowledge. It is not true that the extremist is the most authentic. In fact, you don't know Judaism if Judaism is all you know. I'll say that again. You don't know Judaism if Judaism is all you know. If you don't know Babylonian history, then you can't understand the Talmud, which was written in Babylonia. If you don't understand archaeology and geology and science, you can't understand the Torah and the assumptions under which it was written. If Judaism is all you know, you don't know Judaism. That's why Maimonides was a doctor. He was a physician. Rashi, the greatest medieval commentator, do you know what he did for a living? He made wine for a living. He grew grapes. He was a vintner. Not only that, but by the way, Rashi's daughters were tefillin in the Middle Ages, this greatest medieval commentator. So the idea that Judaism was always one thing is not true. It's just not true. Do you know, when we excavate ancient synagogues, let me just tell you something interesting about them that you can read in Lee Levine, a good scholar at the Hebrew University and, by the way, a conservative rabbi. You can read in his books about ancient synagogues. They have in ancient synagogues, this is great, you'll love this. They have in ancient synagogues plaques on the seats. Right? This is not the first place where Jews gave money and got plaques as a result. They did it in ancient synagogues too, and it showed where people sat. But here's the best part. The names are of men and of women. In other words, in ancient synagogues, there was not a mechitza. There was not a division. That's a newer development, just like the lack of music in synagogue is a development that happened after the destruction of the temple. Because all the psalms were set to music, Judaism has always changed. And that is a good thing. The second thing, and by the way, one last point I want to make about this, which I said tied it to the Haftarah. Here's something that may shock you, but ought not to shock you. When you go to study Bible in any modern setting or university, they will give you a book that I don't recommend you're going out and reading. It's called the Biblica Hebraica Stuttgart. It's as exciting as its title. But let me tell you what it is. It is every manuscript of the Torah that exists. And here's the interesting thing. The oldest manuscripts of the Torah are, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and after that you have to skip almost 1,000 years before we have one. Every single old manuscript of the Torah, every single one, differs from every other one. No two of them are the same. Now, the differences tend to be small, right? It's not like Abraham is called Seymour, right? The differences are small, but there's differences in every manuscript. So this idea that the Torah was given and never changed is contradicted by the fact that even when the rabbis in the Talmud quote the Torah, sometimes they quote it slightly differently from the Torah we have in the Ark. History affects tradition. It always has, it always will, it always should, and we believe that. And we not only do we believe it, but even better, we don't deny it. We don't deny it. The second part of that is we believe in the religious value of the power of the human mind. science is not a threat to Judaism. How could it be? The only way it could be a threat is if Judaism's not true. But if it's true, then it incorporates the legitimate insights of science because that's part of the way God made the world. So to say, for example, that the world is 6,000 years old, it's intellectual medievalism, to put it nicely. It's just wrong. You couldn't have any of the discoveries of science if science worked that way. The medicine that keeps you alive, the world of technological marvels that we all have advantages from, the fact that lifespans keep going up, that infant mortality keeps going down, that medicine, which is based, by the way, among other things, on the discoveries of evolution, all those things that we rely on day to day today, are we then supposed to step into the synagogue and say, but they're not really true? Of course not. We should rejoice in the power of the human mind to uncover the secrets of God's world and not deny it. That also is a feature of our tradition, has always been and should always be. It's what Maimonides said. Maimonides said people use the Torah as a means of physical healing, but it's not. It's for spiritual healing. Maimonides studied astronomy. He studied medicine. He assumed that everything you discover about the world reinforces and helps your faith, not that it destroys it. Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emet hi. The seal of God, say the rabbis, is truth. So if something is true, it can't possibly contradict our tradition. It is why Maimonides, the greatest single mind of the Jewish people, said if he knew something was absolutely true and the Torah contradicted it, he would reinterpret the Torah to incorporate that truth. The third is that in order to be an Or LaGoyim, a light to the nations, you must live your life open to the nations. If the only people that you live among are Jews and the only people that you speak to are Jews, then how are you supposed to be an Or LaGoyim? The challenge of Judaism is to bring Judaism into the world, not to separate Judaism from the world. If we have something important to say, then we should shout it from the rooftops, not whisper it to one another. I remember one time I went, one of the most interesting experiences as a rabbi I've ever had. I spent the day at Oral Roberts University, which is an evangelical college. And by the way, I just want you to know I got blessed more there than I've ever been blessed in a synagogue. Everywhere I went, it was, bless you, rabbi, rabbi, bless you. But here was the interesting thing. Why was it that I spoke to this evangelical college? It's only because I was Rabbi Wolpe. If I was David Wolpe, they'd have no interest in me. But their assumption was that because the Jewish tradition had something to say to the world, they wanted to hear what a rabbi had to say. Now, if you avoid the non-Jewish world, then you cut off our message from God that other people can hear. So, you can be more Jewish if you do it right when you go to general universities, when you work in the world that we all work in, when you live among other people, when you don't say to yourself, the existence of a non-Jewish world is a threat to me. Instead, it's a challenge for me to bring my Judaism to a larger platform. Remember, that was Abraham's mission. God said, what are you doing in Or Kasdim? I want you to spread yourself through the world because you have something to say. And then lastly, conservative Judaism believes in the deep spiritual power of Torah. And that means that you don't have to play parlor games with whether the Torah was written by God or not, like Torah codes, as though God would drop little hints so that you could discover them one day when you invent computers. Instead, the way that you see the power of the Torah is through people's lives. That's how you see it. Not by running it through a computer or by toting it up through gematria, through the numbers that correspond to Hebrew letters, but instead seeing the way that it changes lives. Let me tell you one way that it changed lives in our own movement. The conservative movement is the only movement of Judaism that from the very beginning, from its inception, supported a strong and safe state of Israel. Our earliest founders, like Solomon Schechter, were ardent Zionists at a time when most of the American Jewish community, though we don't like to remember that now, was afraid of supporting the Zionist movement long before World War I, World War II, the State of Israel. And today, too, there are sections of the Jewish world that don't recognize the legitimacy and strengths of a State of Israel. But there is no such thing as an anti-Zionist wing of the conservative movement, never has been. Because we understand that the spiritual power of Torah is demonstrated in its ability to change lives there and here. That it is a this-worldly task, not a next-worldly task. That the extent to which the Jewish people contribute in building a state, in supporting a state, in spreading Judaism's message through the world, that's the extent to which we triumph. Which we are fulfilling the mandate of God, as it says in this morning's Torah portion, to both see and hear. That is, to take those words and to translate them into our lives. That is, after all, what the Torah tells us happened at Sinai. It says, "Viroim et hakolot," they saw the voices. How do you see voices? The only way you see them is the way in which voices translate into actions in human beings' lives. These pillars, the idea that Judaism changes and should change, the idea that our connection is not only to Jews but to the non-Jewish world, to the State of Israel, to God, to one another, to Jews of all movements, there is no Jew to whom we would cut off communications because all of us, Klal Yisrael, every Jew, brings different skills and different values and different importance to Judaism. And also understand that it's very hard to evaluate. People like to play the game of who's a good Jew. Theodor Herzl never put on tefillin in his life. Would we say Herzl's not as good a Jew as someone else? Do we devalue Einstein because Einstein didn't go to synagogue? Even though, by the way, he was asked to be the president of the State of Israel at one point, but declined, probably wisely. How do you evaluate who makes a contribution to the Jewish tradition and the Jewish people? It's not so easy. But one thing we do know is we need all the chorus of voices, and we always have. I'll mention one last thing before I wrap up, which is people say, you know, why aren't the Jews unified? First of all, we never were. We never were. If you look back in Jewish history, we always fought with each other. It's what we do. It's not the only thing we do, but it's what we do. This idea that we used to be unified in some mythical ancient times, just read the Torah, read the Talmud. You know why the Talmud says that the temple was destroyed? Because of hatred of Jews for one another. So maybe we're doing even a little better than at certain times in our ancestry. But this idea that Jews should have different voices, this has always been true. We've always been a chorus of different voices, and that's not a bad thing. That is not a bad thing. But the important idea is that God doesn't want one way of being, one way of doing, or God would not have created us so different. As it says in the Mishnah, when a human king stamps a coin, every coin looks exactly alike. But when Melech Malchei HaMlachim, when God, the King of Kings, stamps human faces, everyone is different. So, beware of the idea that Judaism never changed. It always changed and always will. Beware of people who want to cut off any part of the Jewish people. We need every voice of every description. Even when we violently disagree, we need the discordant chorus of Jews. Don't think that the Torah doesn't have power to change lives. It continually does. It always had. It always will. And remember that our task is exactly what he said in the scroll in Isaiah. As I told you, there are differences in every version of the Torah. And this morning in the Haftarah, it says, Kol banayach limudei Adonai. It's how Maimonides ends his code of law. All your children will be learned of God. But guess what? If you look in the Dead Sea Scroll, the oldest version of Isaiah that we have in the world, it has a different reading. It doesn't say that. It says Bonaichi, spelled differently, which the rabbis say can also be read as all your builders will be learned of God. In other words, our children are supposed to be our builders. They're better builders when they understand more, when they don't close their minds and we don't suggest that they close them, when they learn more about the world and about the Torah, so that together as a Jewish people, we will continue to learn and we will all, each in our own way, with our different approaches and our renewed spirit, continue to build. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.